Euphemisms. It's a whole new language. Euphemistic language turns up in many areas of American life in a variety of situations. Not all euphemisms are alike, but they have one thing in common. They obscure meaning rather than enhancing it. They shade the truth, but they exist for various reasons. Sometimes they simply replace a word that makes people uncomfortable. For instance, the terms white meat, dark meat, and drumstick came into use because in Victorian times people didn't like to mention certain body parts. No one at the dinner table really wanted to hear Uncle Herbert say, "Never mind the thighs, Margaret. Let me have one of those nice, juicy breasts." It would have made them uncomfortable. And at the same time, for the same reason, belly became stomach. But even stomach sounded too intimate, so they began saying tummy. It's actually a bit sad. I first became aware of euphemisms when I was 9 years old. I was in the living room with my mother and my Aunt Lil when I mentioned that Lil had a mole on her face. My mother was quick to point out that Lil didn't have a mole. She had a beauty mark. That confused me, because looking at Lil, the beauty mark didn't seem to be working. And it confused me further because my Uncle John also had a brown thing on his face, and it was clearly not a beauty mark. And so on that day, I discovered that on some people, what appeared to be moles were actually beauty marks. And as it turned out, they were the same people whose laugh lines looked a lot like crow's feet. By the way, that whole beauty mark scam worked so well that some women routinely began using eyebrow pencils to apply fake beauty marks. A fake mole being something no self-respecting woman would ever think of giving herself. Somehow I can't imagine Elizabeth Taylor turning to Joan Crawford and saying, "Lend me your eyebrow pencil, Joanie. I'm going to put a fake mole on my face." By the way, it was only a few years after the Aunt Lil incident that I took comfort in the fact that some people apparently thought my ugly pimples were nothing more than minor skin blemishes. Another role euphemisms play is to simply put a better face on things, to dress up existing phrases that sound too negative. Non-profit became not-for-profit, because non-profit sounded too much as though someone didn't know what they were doing. Not-for-profit makes it clear that there was never any intention of making a profit in the first place. But some words that are euphemized aren't even vaguely negative. They're just considered too ordinary. For that reason, many things that used to be free are now complimentary. Asking the hotel clerk if the newspapers are free makes you sound like a mooch. But are the newspapers complimentary? Allows you to retain some small bit of dignity. This is the reason some hotels offer their guests complimentary continental breakfasts, while others give their customers free donuts. If you're one who would enjoy a closer look at euphemisms, you'll find a number of sections in the book that will interest you. I broke the euphemisms into segments because they play such a large and varied role in American speech. And I call it the new language because it's certainly new to me. I know I didn't grow up with it. And that's my larger point, that it's gotten worse over time. There were probably a few early signs I noticed, but I knew the problem was getting serious when I began to hear ordinary people refer to ideas as concepts. And now, stiff upper lip, you know. Imagine two different commercial airliners taking long, fatal plunges directly into the ground from high altitudes. One is a British Airways plane filled with staid English diplomats and upper-class landed gentry. The other plane is Alitalia, filled with uneducated Sicilian, Greek, and Turkish peasants. As the two planes dive towards certain destruction, which one do you think will have the louder screaming and the more colorful praying, cursing, and blasphemy? You get one guess. Hint, it isn't the British plane.